Let's do it.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Once again, Alec Burks guarding him from the start. Wiggins again. Here's Curry for the record. It's good! There it is! Stephen Curry, the all-time three-point king in the NBA. Number 2974. The man who changed the game, the igniter of the three-point revolution in the NBA. And now he stands alone at the top of the three-point list.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Hoop.
Comma is
adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
I turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs. Like the bullshit in his bracket, I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing. Yes. Yes. And then he got their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in there.
And Marcus Thompson.
I just can't get with this idea of taking 1 hour of content and finding the morsel that might pop and blowing at him.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoop
5-4. We have ignition.
Stay mellow, my friends.
The comma is...
May I introduce you properly since you were a guest of the program this week?
It is another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge with the struggling Wizards here in D.C. I don't know what's up with the boys. They are booty now. Still in the Bay. Now we got two people in the Bay with the hottest team in the world. Marcus Thompson and my man, Tim Kawakami. Gentlemen, are your Warriors in New York yet? Because there was some concern about their travel arrangements as we tape on a Tuesday.
I think they're just about there, right? MC, I think they're just about there. This is going to be great for them. They're going to land in New York. I think the plan was land about 2 p.m. New York time. And
go straight to the arena.
Basically, yeah, you go to the arena. I think Steph's starting his pregame routine on the plane, I think.
Exactly.
He's got to start dribbling, doing the two-dribble
thing.
I think he made a
shot from the left wing.
This is going to be a bizarre game, and
Draymond's already pissed. TK, like, he's already good.
Last night, in any other circumstance, they would sit Steph Curry, right? They would absolutely sit Steph Curry, but because of the record, because of Madison Square, because of TNT, because I think the commissioner might be involved in this. Maybe theoretically, who knows?
Who knows?
You know,
I just want to be on that call, TK. DA was on the call. He was on the call. Between TNT, Silver, Joe Lacob, let's go.
Oh, they said you're playing. No, they probably called him yesterday. It said you are playing these guys. You do whatever you want to do in Indiana. You are playing them on TNT and Madison Square.
Well,
and
I think they didn't say how long he had to play.
Exactly. It might be like try to get him out there for the record. You know, let him make three in the first quarter and then play him very sparsely from there on. I guess that was always the kind of sort of the plan. They're kind of targeting you, you know, if they could, if he didn't go for a burst here or there, they were looking at TNT. Anyway, it's a good show. They're a show, you know, they don't mind putting on a show, a national thing at Madison Square. You know, it does feel right. They're going to be exhausted, but you know how you sometimes get the adrenaline when you're exhausted,
sure,
like you get that one thing, like one more push. Yeah, exactly.
Then 10 minutes.
Then 2 days off in New York, so they can get even more tired. They can get even more exhausted.
Why do you think? Because they were talking like he was gonna take the night off in Indy on Monday. Why do you think they changed their minds on that?
They lost to Philly.
Losing
to Philly, they don't really like back to back losses. They like to pride themselves on bouncing back. A little tougher to do that with Steph and Draymond on the bench. That's a tough bounce back, but. I wonder at what point did Steph decide, I'm okay doing this in Indiana?
I think it was when he wasn't shooting the ball real well in Philadelphia. Like, he just doesn't want, like, I think they don't, they talk themselves into these things sometimes. Like, they start talking about him making 16, and Steph himself did, and breaking both records in the same game. And that's like, you start talking about that stuff and you don't come close. You start to feel disappointed and you want to make up for it the next game. And then you don't do it the next game. You want to make it up for the next game. I think it does build up some internal pressure, and, you know, they're competitive guys and Steph doesn't want to have everyone going, oh, he didn't do it again. And it gets a little life of its own. And I think that's what Draymond was talking about last night. It's like, you know, they're not going, waking up in the morning going, let's get Steph the record. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. You know, but it's like every time they have the ball. And, you know, Marcus and I talk about this all the time. Like, you're conscious of Steph no matter what. Like, these guys don't take shots that they normally would take because they're, well, there's Steph over there. Might as well just pass it to him. Yeah. And it was doubly so with Durant on the floor with those two guys on the floor together. But now I just think it is a little bit of a burden. And they want to get it done with the plan was probably to get it done with before Indianapolis. And then, you know, let them take that game off and then see what happens at TNT. Then it became, okay, won't get it done. Let's take the Indianapolis off and go do it. And then it just became these losses pile up. And I'm like, they're pride, you know. They don't want it to be about the streak. They don't want it to be about.
But it's always this is what I wrote about. It's always about something with them. I mean, that – and I just mean that's life in the fishbowl, life in the circus. It's going to be Clay when Clay comes back in two weeks. Oh, is he – you know, if he doesn't come back and score 30, is he hurting the chemistry? You know how this is going to go. So – you know, I do wonder, and Draymond said they were used to it, and Steph said they were used to it, and Steve said they were used to it. I know they're used to it, but you got a lot of guys on this roster who aren't used to that kind of funhouse version of yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you're looking at yourself in a funhouse mirror and it's distorted and it's not really what you're about and what you're trying to do. But that's what people think when they hear people talk about the Warriors. It's this weird thing that it's not what it is. And I just wonder how you convey that to a James Wiseman who's never had to experience that before, or
the mind
even to Jordan Poole who's never had to experience
Poole.
That
Well, one guy you don't have to convey it to is Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole lives, he's like, hold on, let me get some of that 2015-16 stuff here. Like, yo, I need the big stage and the bright lights. That's
so he's going. Jordan,
or at least he's convinced he is. I don't know if he's
there. Right.
Jordan Poole's ready.
Yeah. Jordan Poole is going to chuck it when Steph. Yeah, Steph's going to be one shot from the record, and it's going to be Jordan Poole taking
I'm
two.
I'm telling
three.
You, it's going to be like TK. Remember when Jerry Rice final game and Terrell Owens caught 22? Jordan Poole's got that in him to where he's like, yo, I know this is your day, Steph. But I'm hot, so let me go.
Hey, clear out. Hey, Steph, get in the corner.
It's gonna be like All-Star in 2009 when MJ hits the baseline jumper with 6 seconds left. Everyone's like, MJ won the game in his last All-Star game. Isn't this great?
And Kobe's like, said, oh, hold on.
F that, give me the ball.
Yep.
Get fouled and shoot these free throws and send it to overtime.
Jordan Poole definitely has some of that in him.
Yeah. But they're going to be so happy to get this over with, no question. And I know Steph's not shooting the ball. That's the thing. He's not shooting the ball well this season. He's just not. And he's still immensely valuable. Obviously, the defenses react crazily to him. So it gets Kevon Looney bucket. Like, Kevon Looney's shooting 10 times. Something's interesting going on. But, you know, he's making 7 of them. And Draymond's making 7 of 10 just because they're wide open. Nobody's guarding them. So all that fits. And then at some point, Steph's just going to go, you know, he's going to go 40, 42, 50, 42, 45. Like, there's just going to be that run like he did last season.
Explode.
And we haven't seen it yet. I think they're going to get through this. And then they got Clay. Like, that's all, like, this whole, you're right, DA. It is good to hear, like, Marcus and I get immersed in it. Or sometimes, like, you know, everything is just, we're dealing with everything at one at a time. But there's always something going on with this team. And that's fun and that's good. But yeah, this is all going on. Meanwhile, there's Clay right on the horizon. Like, literally, right. That's going to be a pretty big deal. Like, they've been talking about that for 2 years when Clay comes back. That's coming either end of this month or beginning of next month. And then you got Wiseman, which, you know, for the Warriors, maybe not for the league, it's a big deal, but the Warriors, it's a big deal. It's just to see this guy. You got Jonathan Kuminga doing it. Like, they've got these things that are always worth a conversation, always worth, you know, whether we call it hype or whatever. Yeah. Like, these things are around them, and they are used to it. This one, I think, has gotten to them a little bit. The Steph record, just because it's a number. It's like, they got to get to it. It isn't like, just play well. It's like, they got to get to this spot, and then they get over it, and I think there'll be just massive relief.
And if it ever gets dull, if there ever isn't anything, you always got Draymond.
No, I was going to say, Draymond will give you something. Yeah.
So it's funny, because I wondered last year, and I had, you know, and I'm sure you all did too, the idea that there wasn't going to be a bridge between Steph and Wiseman and all of the young guys that they were hoping could take the mantle. The sentiment among many, not all, but among many in the league was, I don't know how the Warriors get to the Wiseman era. How did they get there and keep winning and keep Steph from like looking kind of sideways at what you're doing? And they've managed to do it. I don't know. it's been fascinating to me it's not the same group. I think Otto helps, certainly. I certainly think Bielitz has been very good, but it's not like they brought in like a clear number two or number three.
Yeah, they try to get Patty Mills, right? I mean, they try to get Batum. Neither one. They didn't take the taxpayer mid level, so they kind of went the other way. Then Otto Porter, Bielitsa. Yeah. But then Gary Payton too just steps on the floor and is a dominant defensive player. And Jordan Poole,
I would say that around step, DA, yeah. who's been DA's been talking about GP2 forever. He's not shocked at all.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Was he this player?
I said this last week, and I said it when GP was on, that when he was here in DC, me and Frey Katz every night would be like DMing each other. Why isn't this guy putting more? Like, this guy needs to build. He started like, I don't know how many games he started. He started a few games, and then all of a sudden he goes into deep freeze. So he just doesn't play. And yeah, it was like, wait a minute, he's doing something every night to help them be competitive and try to win a game. And it's not that I think he's a starter in this league, but he certainly should be playing in this league, for the Wizards, at the time. So, I've always been a big GP2 fan.
But that's how they've done this bridge, though. I mean, it hasn't been the piece and this move and this thing. Because, listen, their lottery picks aren't playing, or barely playing. Right. And Bielitsa's might be getting pushed out of the rotation. Yeah. Marcus might be leading that charge, and I might be agreeing with him. You got to pick your spots with him, clearly. Yeah. But they've gotten, once it's gone on Anderson, they just got these things that have sort of fit well for this five-game stretch, and they move to someone else for a five-game stretch. And meanwhile, even if Steph's not scoring, the defenses have to just they're flying at him more than ever. Like this season, more than ever. Yeah. I think with this record, it's certainly on everybody's minds, which I think has led to the Steph turnovers. He's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to get the record tonight. What the hell? And he starts flinging the ball around, kind of distracting. Like, okay, this is what it's going to be. And last night, he made three of the stupidest Steph turnovers.
That one to, Wiggins?
The sideline?
I was like, what? Yeah, he still had a live dribble. He just fading pass.
It wouldn't have been a great pass if Wiggins was actually standing there because it could have been intercepted. But it was so bad that it couldn't even be intercepted. Because that's when I think the record stuff gets in his head. Not that he's so desperate to get it and he's frustrated. It's more, okay, you guys are so set on me not getting it tonight. Then I'm, it's like, okay, whatever. Yeah. And for him, that's the one-handed, left-handed, behind the back.
Plays of insanity,
Yep. And he does that. It was seven turnovers, I think. He doesn't shoot great, and he's a plus 17 last night. Like, that's the weight of this. That's the power of this. Somebody just tweeted to me, when do you think, if he's in this extended shooting slump, what point do you think, how long will it last before defense stop jumping at him? I said, 2024, maybe. 2020, 2025, I don't know. Because I don't know what the point is where defense won't, triple team stuff. He's going to be 42 years old, Tom Brady, and there's going to be guys flying at him because they have to. And Kevon Looney will be 27 years old, I think, in 7 years. So, and we'll still be getting those little runner, whatever shots he does. And we had an incredible game last night. I make fun of Looney a lot, but he had an incredible game. And the shot to win. The Kevon Looney offense wins that game for the Warriors. That's why they're winning. That's the bridge. But I don't think, Marcus and I know they did not expect this. They did not expect this. Top end third seed, but more likely 4 or 5 seed.
Like third seed with Clay.
Clay comes back.
Yeah. Clay comes, so maybe they're a little bit above 500. Clay comes back.
Yeah, we hang around until Clay's back, and then we make our move.
Yeah, and then you just explode, and they're the team you don't want to play in the playoffs. And they did not expect this. And it's obviously credit to Steph and Draymond, but these guys haven't been spectacular, but they fit. And the Adults go back to 15-5 last season. That's where they really thought it started. You know, when Wiseman went out, Kelly Oubre went out, and things just started clicking. It wasn't the hardest schedule in the history of the world, but they just started running. They started, you know, spreading the floor. It's just all Steph. Everything complements Steph. We're not going to try to work it any other way. They go 15-5, losing the two play-in games, but they just felt they had something. And, you know, we've heard coaches say this before, like, yeah, right. It's not going to extend in next season. Next season is a whole different thing.
Right.
Different roster. Your players are older. Players are more experienced, period, whatever. And it's been right. I mean, 15-5 has turned into 22-5. Like, is that what they are? I think they are 22-5. Like, it's just been a little bit of a flow into it. And then they got it right. Like, that, you have to say they got this right. And even though I don't think all of this was exactly planned, but they felt something was, they picked something up in finishing 15-5 last season. And it's very similar to what we've seen with a few better pieces, with some more better players. And then they've got Clay and Wiseman coming back, which is the amazing. And Steph hasn't even shot the ball well. He's had a couple really good games, but there's been no run. And Steph is a streaky shooter when he gets going. Like, this thing, he could go thermonuclear for 3 weeks. It hadn't happened yet, and they're 22-5.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I got a question for you two, my OGs.
Yes, sir.
Ray Allen came out the other day. I think he was on a Dan Patrick show. And I think Dan Patrick called Steph Curry the greatest shooter. And Ray was like, hold on. Hold on, you know. So the thought is interesting. You know, there was a time where the three-point shot just wasn't that central to the game, but there were great shooters. Obviously, many are saying Steph is the greatest shooter of all time. But I'm just curious, from the players that you've seen and covered or been up close with, knowing their mentality and kind of how they work, like, who could be in this spot if they thought the way players think now? Like, I mean, obviously, to me, the first one comes to mind is Larry Bird. Like, there's just no way you can tell me Larry Bird would not be here. But he was a playmaker, right? Like, it wasn't about chucking a bunch of threes.
Like, what was the season high? Was like 73?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Something like that.
When you look at it,
some
right?
unbelievable number.
They just didn't think of it that way back then. Like, it was literally a dagger shot. It was a shot that you took twice a game.
Or when you were behind, swings, and you needed to catch up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It just wasn't focal. It wasn't the thing that you hunted every night. It was the thing that happened because of action. You went inside first and the ball started moving around. So it's just different. It's impossible to say. Certainly Bird. I think a guy like Dale Ellis would have been a killer now. Like, Dale Ellis played with a mean streak. Like, he didn't want, like, he thought he should dominate everybody.
But I think that's key,
shot,
though.
He was
DA,
on,
like, you can,
when Dale
you
Ellis
mentality.
Was on, yeah. the net didn't yeah. move yeah. when Dale Ellis was on.
I do think
the
a
net
lot of it is.
Didn't move when he was making threes. Like, he was, his shot was so pure, it was ridiculous. But again, volume. There just wasn't the volume back then.
But you had to have that mentality, right? Like, it's the volume, it's the mentality, and you still got to be good enough to keep doing it at that volume. Because a lot of dudes start getting them up, and the percentage go down, and it's like, all right, hold on. Let me go back. Or the coach.
Yeah, the coach is saying, you are not doing
so
that
that's
anymore.
What I'm thinking. Who are the guys who are like Dale Ellis was a great one, who were like, yo, they would have had the mentality, they would have had the volume, and they would have been good enough to keep doing it.
But here's the Steph thing that we've all talked about. I think, Mark, you wrote, it's the fact that he's a spot up shooter as one of the best the world's ever seen, and he dribbles into his three pointers.
Yes,
like
yes.
those. I can't like. There's nothing like that. There just is. Reggie wasn't like that. Ray Allen wasn't like that.
Reggie came off the screens.
Exactly.
And he was great.
And
he was one of the best ever. You know.
Exactly.
Ray Allen is the only guy that's even in the conversation to me in terms of being able to come off the dribble and rise, because he did have the one dribble pull up. I mean, he did have that, but he didn't use it a lot. It was, well, you know, it was mostly pin downs coming off. So When I did the story, when we had that series a couple of years ago about the history of the three-pointer in the Athletic, and I wrote that the Allen three against San Antonio is the greatest three in the history mm-hmm. of the game, and I still believe that, by the way. Yep. I talked to Ray about it, and I mentioned this in passing, not even like to try to make a point or anything. I was like, the closest defender to you was Manu Ginobili, and he fell down when he was trying to get the rebound. And so you had a really open look. I mean, the footwork was incredible, but mm-hmm. the bottom line is they couldn't get to you. And I said, do you think it would have been any different if Ginobili had been able to get out to you? And he said very calmly, well, I don't think he would have had the wherewithal to contest the shot. No. I was like, oh, wow. Shit.
Wherewithal. He's throwing wherewithal at people.
Jeez. I was like, oh, this guy's a professional.
Okay. Yeah. Jesus. That is great. And you know what? I just think that I would say Ray Allen is right there with Steph. Mm-hmm. Of the shooters I've seen, I watched him at UConn, played UCLA, and was the Final Four regional final. I just watched that guy. This guy is the pure shooter I had seen at that point. Yeah, good. And throughout his NBA career. But I think Steph is the most significant shooter, is the way
question.
I would put it.
Yeah,
just
like,
just because when you just with the importance of the shot,
changed the game.
Yeah, it just continues through till now, where it just warps the game. It changes
geometry of the floor
everything that's out there. Yeah. He's the most significant. But yeah, you could say you know Rick Mount or whatever. I mean, you hear about the old stories of all these guys.
Gail Goodrich, West. Baby.
Gail Goodrich. Yeah, I mean,
here's
there's a whole bunch
who,
of people.
I don't know. Maybe I just remember it like largely from my youth, and it just seems so amazing. But Drazen Petrovic felt like a guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Drazen didn't give a damn. Yeah, yeah. Give me that. Drazen was cold-blooded.
Yes. That's who Reggie says is the great. Was it his favorite shooter?
No, but Reggie was – I think Reggie would have been in this era – would have been close. Reggie, because Reggie wanted to take the shot. He wanted to embarrass you. He wanted
and
to
I think
destroy 6'7 mentally.
Matters, man. Like,
that too.
Exactly. Like, he's off. Like,
can put it over people. No question. Yeah. I go back to when Mark Jackson first called Clay and Steph the greatest shooting backcourt of all time. And, you know, I was writing it. And so, like, it's bombastic. Right. It's probably not true. You know, at that point, you know, it was 2 years into it, whatever it was.
Yeah. It did feel crazy, though.
No, it was typical Mark, and it did feel like it was probably 3 years too early. Yeah. But you went back and looked at it.
He's right.
Like that series, they left that series. Yep. Like you walked out of that series like, all right, Mark, you might –
I mean, he saw something clearly in practices. He saw, like, this is like Joe Lacob wasn't saying this stuff, and he's certainly not one to back down from a commanding statement. Jerry, you know, I thought West and Goodrich probably would have been the next competitive, would have been the one you would have compared it to. And Jerry wasn't like saying it. He wasn't like disagreeing or anything, but he just wasn't saying that. It just was it's pretty amazing for Mark. I'll always give him credit for giving those two guys the total leeway. Just not only that you can do it, just shoot whenever you're supposed to do it. Like, this is what I want you to do. Don't like, it's not about cautious. It's not, but like, this is the best team thing for our team. And they took that and they just kept going. And I remember like the San Antonio series, they should have beat San Antonio. That year in the playoffs, second round. And it was just like Clay and Steph. I mean, I sat on courtside for like one of those games. I think the one they won, they should have won game one.
Two,
they lost in overtime.
That was
but
the, game one was the Ginobili shot.
That's right. That's right.
Steph went off game one, and then San Antonio was like, we got to stop Steph. And then Clay went off in game two.
Exactly. I was sitting at half court, and literally it felt like Clay would take two steps past half court, get the pass, and shoot immediately. Like, it wasn't even – it was ridiculous. The stuff you see in pickup games. Like, I've seen Don McLean and a few other guys. Like, you know, these legendary slate pickup games. They take – it's Chris Mullin. You watch Chris Mullin in a pickup. Right. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. That's a pickup game. Like, this was an NBA playoff game on the road, and Clay – it was unbelievable. And Steph was pretty good that game too. But Steph was – Clay was unbelievable. And you think – okay, Mark Jackson has seen the future. Like, he saw it.
That was the game, because I was like,
what?
Oh my God.
people were going crazy.
I covered that game after I covered, and I covered the Clippers series before, and I had seen them, and they were really good. But that game in San Antonio was the one I went, oh my God.
Yep. Yep.
These guys are unreal.
And it isn't just like, isn't it fun? A couple shooters, run teams. Yeah. No, this was like, this could be winning. This could be what you build everything around, and it clearly was.
There was one play in that San Antonio series. I remember going home to watch the game, and Chris Webber was on the call. And Steph was dribbling in front of Tony Parker, and he lost the dribble. So he just picked it up and shot it. And Chris Webber is so befuddled, he didn't have the ball. He really was losing the ball. Was like, yo, I'm about to turn it over, so maybe I should just shoot. And he just picked it up and shot it. It was move. It was crazy.
I've told Steph, I think he's better in the scramble situations where he's open shot. When he's flipping around and he's trying to figure out where he's on the court and he just turns and shoots without even thinking it, that ball goes down so often. It's just hand-eye coordination. It's rhythm. It's feel, whatever it all is. And it's funny when those things happen, when it's a little broken –
yeah,
that guy is the killer of all killers. So, it's been amazing to flashing back to those early years with Stephen Clay. And again, I'll just go to, I didn't see it coming, and Mark Jackson saw it coming, and then those two saw it coming after Mark saw it. They didn't think it like that, but then Mark started telling him that. They're like, hey, I asked Steph once not too long, did Mark tell you he was going to say that? Or didn't Mark tell you you were this before he went public? He goes, no, it's typical Mark. He just said it publicly first. And that's it. There we are. Okay, we're greatest shooting backcourt of all time. And then it happened. Pretty remarkable. But yeah, and by the way, Clay's still coming back. Clay's coming
back. Mark Jackson, the Boudini Brown of basketball, right?
Yes, exactly. I think he will accept that. I think he will accept that. Absolutely.
He would. Absolutely.
So, Timmy, you wrote last week definitively, pretty strongly, they are not trading James Wiseman. And I'm like, okay, that's probably true, but...
They lose seven in a row, and everybody's pounding this thing. They need a center. Okay, that and somebody becomes available.
Yeah,
theoretically, in that 1 out of 50 chance, I think they would consider it. And if somebody great comes available, there's one person who is pretty powerful there who will not do it, but he can be convinced. It would take a whole lot of things to happen that are very unlikely to happen for them to even consider it. They would have to start losing games. There's no question. They'd have to start losing games, and they go, well, wait a minute here. How do we stabilize this? They're probably not going to lose. They sure don't think they're going to lose games. And they've got Clay coming. Even if they start losing games, they still got Clay coming, and then they want to see Wiseman. So all of these, and forget about that they think Wiseman is a foundational player. They do think this, and they think this more than almost all other teams. So what value are you getting for him if you think he's great and other teams don't? So are you getting that great player? And he's their, if you just look at the salaries, you just look at what they owe everybody and do this, they can't pay another player. They can't, literally, unless they're trading Wiggins along with Wiseman,
might be the other untouchable piece at this point.
Exactly. Right? And who they absolutely value more than anybody else. Then you start doing that kind of, Django with the salary cap and the luxury tax. And it's just this is why they're saying it. It isn't just because they love Wiseman, although they love Wiseman. They're saying it because they love Wiseman. And it wouldn't really be practical for them to trade him unless they're getting Giannis back, unless they're getting, Durant. And again, they're not getting those guys. Right. So that's why they can say, they're not saying it because there is no, they can see no way that trading Wiseman would improve their team. They're saying there's no practical way that trading him would improve their team. And plus, they think they got a really good team. They're not thinking, more piece. We just got to get Miles Turner and then we'll be even. They're not sure they would be that much better with Miles Turner. And they would be somewhat better.
I think, they'd be better in some ways, but not demonstrably overall.
Would they be better
based on what they have to give up to get him?
Exactly. And whether that's for this year or the next year or the year after that, And there would be games where Steve Kerr would not close with Miles Turner. Like, if they had him on this team, there would be damn sure games where they don't close with Domantas Sabonis, who I love as a player. Yeah. But they go with Draymond to close games. Like, that's how they've done this.
As they should.
It's just a tricky thing. Again, Marcus and I, you know, like, we've heard this ringing in our ears for 2 years now. They're not, well, actually only 1 year, right? It's only really been one year since they drafted James Wiseman.
Yeah.
But for two seasons.
Right. That this when it was obvious they were going to get a top two pick.
Yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy they think is going to be one of their leads. You know, now maybe Kuminga's the other one. Jordan Poole's another one. Whenever this Steph run ends, like who knows? Or to help Steph at the end when Steph isn't this player. And so it isn't like for me and MT or people around the team, it isn't like this shocking thing. But it was like around the league. It's like, well, you're eventually going to move, right? I mean, eventually they're going to have to start thinking about it. And that's why I wrote that piece was like, check one more time. And I'm pretty sure about this. Right. And it's, you know, it's also, you know, practically, if Draymond isn't the defensive player that he is right now, let's say in two seasons. I mean, even this season is saying a lot that he's made this far. But let's say it's two more seasons. Who's going to protect the rim for them? They think they got James Wiseman. Like, they don't have to go searching for that person. Yeah, and Kuminga. Right. And they'll be 23 and 22 at that point. Like, they just like the way this has shaped out. Again, not that they predicted this, but they predicted some version of this with the sense that, okay, even when this great thing comes to an end and they want it to go on as long as possible, clearly, but even then, and when they're paying Steph $52 million, they need somebody making $9 million who's really good. And their idea is going to be John Kuminga, is going to be James Wiseman. That's just, they're set on that. And again, practically, even if you say, okay, that is a little bit of exaggeration when they say absolutely won't trade him, but they won't trade him for, there's nothing going to be available that's going to entice them. At least now going into February and the trade deadline. So I'll just say they're not trading James Wiseman. And then for a lot of interesting reasons, but a lot of just plain dollar reasons, because then they'd have to not take a massive crunch on the long-term luxury tax payments. They'd have to put Wiseman in with Wiggins, and they're not doing either. Like, they're not doing either thing. Right. So
unless it's
Giannis. It's not Ben Simmons. You know, it's not Miles Turner. It's not. It's not the guys who they could get. That's not who they do it for. They do it for the guys you can't get. So then they're not. They're not.
And I do think there's a part of just how the franchise works that likes building their own stars, right? They like, you know, like, you could get.
Well, who's the star that they inherited? I'm trying to think. Yeah,
they like that. They like the idea. Like, you get a Miles Turner and, like, you know, he'll be good. He can do X, Y, and Z. But can he play Warriors basketball, right? That's a big deal to them. And they've gotten guys like Wiggins to come over. That's why they love Wiggins so much. Like, they brought him in, and he learned how to play their way, and he looks better for it. And it makes their whole situation look better, right? You get Jordan Poole. Like, you know, you start seeing these guys come in, and that's all a boon to how they do things. It all starts with Steph, but just, you know, if they can develop Kuminga and Wiseman the way they like to play, it's tough to find something better than that, like, on the market. That that's the hard part. Even though Miles Turner is like Kevon Looney, like, that dude is like perennially 19, right? Like,
he's been in the league 14 years. He's 23 years old. Like, coming up on his rookie extension.
Crazy. That dude is young. Like, he's a year older than Chris Duarte, who just got drafted. Like, that's wild. Just doing. Right. But I do think they like that. They look at Wiseman and Kuminga and, like, nah, he's, watch when we finish with him. Right, like, watch when we get done with them.
When they're done with boarding school.
You know, going back to that question you asked, how do they do this bridge? We should have mentioned Wiggins, because how they do it. Like, he was okay to good last season and very good at the end, and he's just picked that up.
He became the bar,
like,
right?
Yeah, like, Yeah, like that. Like that's when they have Wiggins on the floor, they're just they make sense in a lot of ways,
right?
And their roster just settles in, and he's important. He's not going to score 35 every night. No. He's not going to score 35 every four nights. But the other stuff that he does, the defense,
right?
They can try to go get a bucket, and that's and he's 26 years old. Like right. that's mm-hmm. been the like that's a perfect bridge age, right? That is the perfect
yeah.
bridge age,
yeah. Yeah.
And he's been real. If they don't have him. I'm not saying they would be a bad team, but they would be, a lot of
they
these weird
close
things.
They would be
yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. Like, a lot of these weird things we see about them, like, hey, all of a sudden they don't have anybody who can score. What, you know, they're the Warriors and Memphis is completely shutting them down. That would happen a lot more often if Wiggins wasn't on this team. And he's playing, yeah. playing 35 minutes a night and they need him out
also,
there.
Also, guards yeah. would be torching them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Or they just have to play a purely defensive
yeah.
player,
yeah.
and that would hurt them even more offensively. So, like he's not Kevin Durant, you know, and he's not Andre Iguodala in his prime. But they were right again. Joe Lacob told Marcus Thompson this, by the way. He told him this. This best trade in a long time, and it freaking has turned out.
I still think they could have got another pick from Minnesota, but I stand.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, DA, yes. What was it like in the building? We weren't there, obviously.
Right. Philly, Saturday?
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was a great crowd.
Brooklyn
great
was crazy, crowd. But it's just for on TV, it was wild.
Much more hyped in Brooklyn. It was much yep. more hyped in Brooklyn. Yeah, yeah. No, the crowd was great.
You could hear the ooh every time yeah. Steph yeah. went up for a shot.
There was that buzz in the audience every time he caught the ball on the offensive side of the floor. Didn't matter where it was. It was great. And it was, I'll say this, it was not that it was a revelation, but just watching Tybalt defend him.
Oh,
Jesus Christ, that kid's good.
How is he not starting? That's what I get. But it's like, why isn't he starting? Like, he's.
I don't know. But I
don't understand these teams. Like, I don't get it. It's like you have the league is full of guards who will destroy you if you can't guard them. Why aren't the guys who can guard them more valued? I don't understand that.
I've only asked this question for 30 years, Marcus.
It just doesn't make any sense.
You say defense matters and you can't win without defense, and you never pay people to play defense, ever. You never pay them what you pay people to score, ever. Not even Lou Dort, who was a great defender, great on-ball defender. You know, what did he get, 15 for 5? And everybody was like, yeah, that's a fair deal for Lou Dort. You know, like, it was more than that. But it was not $100 million. You know what I mean? Like,
Draymond got $100.
He's the exception. You have to literally be one of the best defensive players ever, of all time to get that contract.
Well, there was a whole debate, like, is Ben Wallace really a Hall of Famer? I'm like, what? How is this even a question?
if you didn't watch him play.
Just like you just look in the box score and,
oh my God,
you know, it's just that does it. And you're right, DA. It's like coaches do this too. They're like, defense is all about defense. I'm going to coach him out of defense and I'm going to play my offensive guys though. It's like, wait a minute here. That doesn't make sense. And like we see this with Curry, he plays defensive guys first. Like, it does, you see that on the floor, you know, look the difference. Like Juan Toscano-Anderson is not a very good offensive player. He does a lot of stuff that isn't great offensively. But when he's on the floor, he plays defense. He knocks people around. And obviously you have to have Steph Curry on the floor too,
yeah,
but you need those other, you can't just have offensive guys, even, you know, if you're going to be the number one offensive rated team, like you just can't do that. And
it just makes me angry when we're doing this 75th, you know, top 75 all time. And I wrote it cause I was angry. I said, if you don't understand why Dennis Rodman is not one of the 75 greatest players of all time, you don't know basketball.
Yeah,
you do not. You don't know the game. You should shut up.
I think a part of that is you didn't see him. Like you had to be there to understand. Like there was an element that will never be present in box scores. It will never be present in analytics. Yeah. You just had to watch it and understand, like you just had, like,
well, that's what I feel. Yeah, I feel that way about Scotty. I you know, again, he gets tons of conversation because he's Scotty and he was Michael's number two, but I don't know. I think he's valued correctly for what he really, I mean, he was a ridiculously, you know, versatile player in every single facet of the game. And I mean, again, this is maybe like kind of revealing when I was growing up, but those are the teams I was watching when I was growing up.
Sure.
And it was so valuable. Jerome Kersey was another one of my favorite. Like those guys, I just thought they win. They're winning players.
They
and yet
absolutely.
So, you know, they fight for their contracts, they bounce around, and they're not considered. Like Danny Green is a way lesser version of that. But how many championships does a man have to win in order to be a pretty, really good player? Like he's a maybe not right now, but for that 8-year run.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Credit to that. Credit to that.
Kyle Lowry, one of them guys.
Kyle Lowry, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, what you heard last year was that. You know, that's why Philly wouldn't do the deal with Toronto for Kyle Lowry because they wanted Thibault back, you know, really, part of the package. So I get it. Marcus, let me ask you this, and Timmy, jump in on this too, but this is called Hoops Adjacent for a reason. Mm-hmm. Anybody in the Bay give a damn about the Raiders today?
Oh, yeah. There's a, man, it's a whole, like, parking lot.
They still do?
Yeah, it's like 15 people.
I'm asking. I'm not saying
about 15 or 20 people who care. More than what I expected, to be honest. Like
the football.
It's NFL. People are still riding. You know, like I do feel like you bring that conversation up, you're inevitably gonna hear somebody say, you know, screw the Raiders, right? Or I'm done with them. But well, I get the feeling, TK. They're watching the games.
It's NFL. Yeah, I mean, it's a lesser degree of it, but they're not going to all of a sudden become 49er fans. Like that's not happening.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But that's Ravens and DC and the Washington team. That's not. There's no co-mingling. You know,
MT will love this conversation I had though today with our editor Zach Pierce. It's like at some point, and Mark Spears is kind of nudging me along this road, but he's right. I understand the economics. The Raiders had to go where they could get a stadium, and Las Vegas is where they could get a stadium. Mark Davis could not afford one. It couldn't work out with Oakland, but the Raiders will never be the same outside of Oakland. They'll never be the same. They were the same in LA or a version of, because Al was still around. So whatever, Al, they could move to Mars and still and be the Raiders. But you take Al, obviously Al passed, and then you move them to Las Vegas. It's not the same, and they're going to have tourists as they're, you know, going to games, and they're going to be, you know, a transitory team, and they're just going to be another NFL team. I really do. Spears started me thinking about this, but I really started thinking about it more, and I don't know if I'm going to write something about it, but it just feels like they're just another team now, and not an interesting team, right? Just another bland team. They had the Gruden was kind of theme park, right? You try, let's go back and we'll recapture what we were, and he's going to make faces on the sidelines, and isn't this great? And it didn't work for a lot of different reasons. That's what they're just kind of this, other, you know, they're the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're the, you know, they're just a team. And in Las Vegas, it really highlights it because that's what Las Vegas is. It's just a kind of, you know, it's a manufactured. It's something that's kind of conjured in the desert and come go see it. And then you go home. And I'm beginning to feel this about the Raiders. And, you know, I don't want to be like just Oakland, had to be Oakland, but that was the soul of this team. They were crappy in Oakland too, by the way, right?
For decades, but
they were crappy, like, oh my God, crappy for this area. Yeah. In Vegas, crap, you know what? They'll go watch, you know, Adele.
We'll go to Bellagio next.
Yeah,
I think the Raiders are going to be an interesting case study about like where sports is headed. And as these prices get so high and these buildings get so high and teams get so high, like is there, like, is what's being lost from the, you know, the city element, the regional element, oh, sure, the closeness, sure, sure. Is it made up for by the added profits? And, you know.
Right. Well, Warriors are going through that. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, but, right. you know, right. this is what it is now. Like, teams are going to cost $2 billion, $5 billion, right? The stadiums are going to cost $2 billion. Like, the family of four for $100, that's done. Like, it's luxury. Like, that's done. So now we're getting to see the ramifications of that. And you're going to see, like, yo, was it better? Was it better? Right. Was it a net positive that you went and got the big money, but you also lost this kind of indescribable, intangible element that kind of defined it?
Right.
Hey, RFK Stadium. Man, I love that place. I love that place.
Gibbs used to say, you know, there's crud hanging off of the ceilings, and we love that here. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's when I was first started in sports writing, Eagles at Redskins, man. Yeah, it was just unbelievable.
It was the atmosphere was unbelievable, and I just, you know, I missed that era, and it just, to my chagrin. I mean, I went to a few games, but as a fan, this was before I started. But it's not the same. John Sally put it better than anybody who's ever put it. When the Pistons moved from Joe Louis Arena, where they had been, or Cobo Hall Arena, where they had been playing, and the Silver Dome, where they had been playing, out to Auburn Hills, which is, you know, Auburn Hills. It's 31 miles from Detroit. And Sally said, we used to play in front of the auto workers, and now we play in front of the auto executives. And
That's pretty good.
What's happened. What's happened. And it's changed the game. And, you know,
my first trip, I stayed at a hotel in Detroit. I didn't know this. Like, I was first on a beat. I stayed at a hotel in Detroit. And then, you know, I'm like, all right, let's get to this game. And then I realized how far I had to go. Like,
31
where
miles.
The hell is this? Yeah. Like, I was late. I was like, yeah, but I'm in Detroit. Like, I didn't know. I mean, it was all Detroit to me coming from Cali. But it's like, yo, that was way out there. Then there's like nothing out there. There's like Applebee's.
No, there's nothing.
No. I was just like, what is this? This is not the D. Right. Like, what are we?
This is the future. That's what this is. It's good to see that a lot of teams are coming back to the city. I mean, San Francisco. I mean, you know, the Warriors are, it's a little different because you're coming back to San Francisco, which is kind of its own tale. They like sports. I don't know that they love sports.
They like the 49ers, and then the 49ers moved. So.
Right. Oh, man.
No, but downtown arenas are great. Stadiums are great, you know. A's are trying to pull this off. We'll see if that ever happens. But I just don't feel it. That Vegas was always the money play. And again, understandable.
Right.
But you really start to disassociate yourself from everything.
Let's end on this. Let's bring it back to the Warriors, because you mentioned them now playing at Chase Center, which is just a palace and every bell and whistle you could possibly have. And I remember, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. Rick Welts, who I love, who's a great guy, saying, well, we're going to get about, you know, we're thinking maybe 80% of the fans will come across. Mm-hmm. We have all these different ways we're going to get them across to Chase Center. Is it anywhere near 80%?
MT, you know, because
80% of what fans?
The same fans. But I'll say this, though. You know, the Oracle fans, I always say this. Yeah. That had changed.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, there are a lot of fans who are from, like, the suburbs, Walnut Creek, the outer area, who definitely have the ability to come. So I wouldn't be surprised by that. Yeah.
But the night, let's say the 20,
the section,
you know,
200,
we believe,
the section 200, yeah.
Yeah, the we believe 2007 fans, probably not. I walk through the crowd to get to my seat every time. I, you know, kind of do it purposely, and I wouldn't say it's like, hey, this is Oracle Prime, but there's a lot of familiar faces there.
Okay, good.
I mean, you know, they're paying a big number, and they're probably selling them off a lot of tickets throughout the seat, try to pay off for the seats. It is, but the Oracle crowd, by, you know, after the first championship, let's say, it changed dramatically. And they started charging $1,000.
Definitely when KD got
there. Yeah. It was a different crowd. You're starting to talk about it. Yeah. Silicon Valley, CEOs, those were the first rows. And they were like, there's a picture and there's Apple's guy and this guy's, and then it's just boom, boom, boom. So that changed. So he's probably saying 80% of that. Populace, and that's probably accurate. And that was going to be the question. Like, if you're charging this rate, even in San Francisco, are you going to be able to pull this off? Like, is this going to – and guess who saved them? Steph Curry again. this run just made it, okay, they're set. Like, the Jordan run in Chicago was – probably what 14 years of really fascinating basketball.
This is going to be right there. And they got and a new so, building out of it too.
New building out of it, and they're still getting sellouts out of it, right? Or it had just ended or whatever
not as
it was.
Many, but yes.
So this will last another 20 years because just the vibe of it, because this is what a sustained amount of incredible entertaining basketball will do for it, and they've done it. And the crowd's different. The crowd's it's quieter in there. There's no question. But this is the price you pay. And as I've said, they'll take like Joe Lacob sits on that friggin' first row to start the third quarter by himself for what it's like 6 minutes almost every single night because they're all eating crab claws in the bunker suites. Does he mind while he's seeing the dollars pour in? Like, does he mind that? You know, like there are times
they
when
mind
the people
it enough
he's
to get
brought
some
with
fillers.
Him. Yeah. They definitely might do that for the playoffs. But like, I'll see Joe come in with like three guests. And then the start of the third quarter, it's just Joe. The three guests are still in the bunker suite. Even if they're Joe Lake, if they're not with them. Joe's out there, though. Joe's out there. But,
look, you can say what you want about Lake. I know a lot of people do, but that dude took $2 billion out of his pocket, okay?
Yep,
$2 billion and built that thing. So I can't.
Yep.
And I can't say anything. And he's paid insane luxury tax for years.
Exactly.
Now,
that's the other thing is when you do talk about the making moves around the tax, like they're paying $180 million in tax. Like you could not imagine that. Like most teams don't pay $180 for their payroll, and he's paying $180 for his tax. So just on that, he's brash. He makes loud statements. He rubs people the wrong way sometimes, but. Thanks. What do you want an owner to do? You want him to win. You want him to pay what it costs, and that's what he's been doing.
Exactly. All right, gents. I appreciate the Bay Area update and all things. Leave that 5-star review for us. You know how to do this on Apple, on Spotify, Google Play, wherever you hear this fine American podcast. Timmy, you're not familiar with this, but Marcus always tells the people what to do if they don't want to leave a 5-star review on any given episode. What should they do, Marcus?
They should keep it to themselves, you haters. Tim Kawakami's going to block you.
Probably already have.
All right. Later.
His father, Dale Curry. Saw Dell, saw his mother, Sonia. Bob McKillop, his college coach at Davidson, is here as well. The man standing right next to Coach McKillop is Larry Riley. He was the man who drafted Stephen Curry as a member of the Golden State Warriors. What a moment this must be.
And the degree of difficulty, right? Doesn't matter if you've got one, two, three guys on him. Alec Burke closing quickly. A long three as Curry.